Okay, friends, be here in just a moment. Getting the right resolution. Hopefully that's good. And hi. Okay. All right, this is Adventures in Identification number 6. And we'll see if it goes any longer than that. We had reached the point in this marvelous ancient stanza from, well, probably middle Atlantean times, when initiation became a real option. I think in earlier Atlantean times it was not the case. But I will read the first two verses that we discussed. And they are, I stand between the heavens and earth. I vision God. I see the forms God took. I hate them both. Naught do they mean to me. For one, I cannot reach, and for the lesser of the two, I have no longer any love. Torn am I, space and its life. I cannot know, and so I want it not. Time and its myriad forms I know too well. Pendant I hang betwixt the two, desiring neither. So the individual here is really the candidate for the third initiation. He is far from the so-called wretched aspirant, and yet he is torn between the possibilities of the cosmic ethers and the true life of initiation, and the ordinary 18 subplanes. Now, maybe what I can do is to go into consult our map here. I'd like to do that because the AAB diagrams do show the picture. Here he is on the higher aspect of the lower mental plane, on the fourth subplane, focused in a fairly illumined personality, focused within the mental unit, receiving impression from the egoic lotus, and yet he inspires to God in his heaven, which is up here on the cosmic ethers. So this is a situation which must be resolved, and hopefully a victorious resolution will come forward. God from high heaven speaks. There is a change. I hear with ear attentive and listening, turn my head. That which I visioned, yet visioning could not reach, is nearer to my heart. Old longings come again, yet die. Old chains of glamour snap. Forward I rush. So now there is an intensification of the pairs of opposites. First, from the higher realms itself, there is a going forth toward the increasingly soul-infused personality by the higher aspects of his nature. His triadal self, which is an extension of his true self or monadic self. Well, what is high heaven? I think it's not just the voice of the soul here speaking, although it is that to a degree. If it is, there is some word coming forth from the jewel and the lotus and from the central fire within that jewel, which ultimately means that the monad is speaking, for the monad makes itself heard, known, felt. The monad becomes impressive at the third initiation, It is the first conscious contact with the monad. So from the cosmic ethers, a voice is heard. And even if it's heard through the egoic lotus, it is the cosmic etheric centers which are speaking through that egoic lotus, and especially the monad speaking through the jewel, the voice of God. Because with respect to ourselves, the monad is God. The monad is already, in a sense, a member of the highest point of tension, a member of Shambhala. The monad is a tiny cell within one of the seven centers of the planetary logos. There is a change. There is no longer that condition of feeling so torn. A great magnetism is being applied from the higher realms. We human beings don't have to do it all ourselves. As we invoke, there will be an evocation. There will be an answer. There will be a response. We are met halfway across the bridge, as it were. DK discusses this as the consciousness of the aspiring builder of the Antikorana seeks to cross that bridge of light into the higher points of tension. There comes a response from his higher nature, from the God within. So indeed there is a change. And I hear with ear attentive. You know, what's interesting here, the ability to listen, the ability to hear is the very first siddhi encountered on the cosmic ethers. If I can find that, my friend Keith Bailey long ago put color to a number of these charts of the Tibetans and made some composites, which are very good. And here is one of the composites which he made. And we see that once the Antikorana is built, the very first siddhi or power or extra sense encountered on the cosmic ethers is a correspondence to hearing. It's comprehension of the four sounds. It's a higher type of hearing. So one begins to wonder whether that is what is activated at this point, and some form of intuitive or Buddhic hearing is actuated. I hear with ear attentive. Of course, if you think about the heart, the word ear is in it. And listening with the heart is in a way much more sensitive, much more receptive than to hear only with the outer ears. We're not talking about the outer ears at this point. We're talking about an inner type of hearing. And there is a kind of new form of concentration upon these inner and subtle worlds, because after all, something entirely higher is making its impression. God, the God within us, the monad, is making its way down through the triad and into the consciousness of the aspiring one who is beginning to use the Antikorana to reach these higher worlds. I hear with ear attentive and listening, a deliberate act of focused hearing. I turn my head, which means that I look in a new direction. And instead of looking with frustration out into this in-between world, which is neither God in high heaven nor the lower worlds with which I am disgusted, instead of sort of being caught between them and turning my gaze in the usual direction that disciples do, simply towards their duty, and pretty well focused on the mental plane, I'm looking higher. I turn my head towards these higher worlds in which I wish to participate as more than simply an individual encapsulated within my individuality on the higher mental plane. That is a great individuality, and it certainly is the harvest of many lives of labor and accumulation, but we want more. We want more here, if that is possible. And listening, turn my head, so I change my direction of vision. I was looking towards high things on the lower mental plane, and I was attentive to the downflow of soul impression from the ego and from the solar angel. But now I turn my head towards something higher, that which I visioned, which was God, after all, and space and its life. I had tried to vision those things. I vision God. That's in the very first of these verses. That which I visioned, yet visioning could not reach, because the vision is not realization. It is not the real thing. It is a substitute, something which is resonant with the real thing, but is only a symbol of the real thing. Although many people take the vision for the real thing and therefore live a deluded life. That which I visioned, yet visioning could not reach, is nearer to my heart. Heart and soul are the same. Heart is extremely sensitive, and the reality behind the vision is actually being sensed by that sensitivity within us, which is our soul consciousness, our inherent soul consciousness. In other words, there is actually a touching that begins to occur, with St. Paul, faith being the substance of things hoped for, actual substance of those things, and not just a vision of those things. Faith in its higher reaches has the ability to become a touching of the very substance of that which is hoped for and longed for. So there is a greater authenticity in the feeling of that which lies behind the vision. There is a revelation beginning to occur. It's not complete yet, but it is nearer to the consciousness, because in this case, heart, consciousness, and soul, sentiency, higher sentiency, these are all equivalent. I am able now to feel more deeply the reality of that which lies behind the vision, and revelation is closer to me. Well, the lower aspects of our nature do not die easily, and across the screen of consciousness, emerging as an old content of consciousness, come the old longings. Because we have, for ages, for millions of years, been directed by our desire nature, and they are inherent in the lower man, the old Adam, who seeks the various kinds of fulfillment of the lunar nature. Old longings come again, but they don't last, they die. Under the impression of this more real vision, the voice of God, the voice of our higher principles, the old longings fade. We see them for what they are, but they cannot stand or withstand the intensity of the voice of God and the presence of our higher principles. So they die away, and the voice of God is sustained within our consciousness. We are very much in that higher energy. Glamour is all about attachment based on the misidentification of ourselves as a lower ego. So whenever I see the word chains, I think of Vulcan. And I think of perhaps Vulcan, Mars, and Saturn together in their lower in their lower qualities. So we have been held in a world where our objectives have been personal, limited, veiling of a deeper truth, and we feel ourselves freed. Vulcan is the forger of chains, but he's also the one that can break the old chains and create new bonds to a higher life. Vulcan always kills Abel, which is Mars. And, you know, this is happening around the period of the second initiation, where will begins to take the place of desire. So when we are the victim of desire, we are held in chains. These are Taurian issues. And the lower type of desire gives way to a higher lighted aspiration and idealism, which has to do with the higher Taurian energy and the higher application of both Mars and Vulcan. So we are no longer held in the world of lower desire. We desire, in a way, nothing that pertains to the lower self. And we are straining forward under a point of tension. And that type of intensification of our will to focus within a higher dimension puts pressure on the old desires and the chains of desire which link us to those lower worlds. And that pressure, that straining, that snaps our attachment to those lower realms. We desire so much, aspire so much towards this higher point of tension, and are so successful in willing our immersion in this higher point of tension, that it's just too much for the old attachments, and the strain under which they are put snaps them. And the minute the snapping occurs, and the feeling of liberation from old longings and desires enters the consciousness, the spirit within the man rushes forward towards those higher dimensions. Because after all, spirit is that which can never finally and ultimately be contained forever. Spirit is the volatile essence, the free flying essence. In that respect, it is like Uranus, which demands its freedom from all ring past knots. Should it be rings past knot or ring past knots? Rings past knot is probably more correct, but it's not the way it's usually spoken. So the man identified more and more as God, more and more as the higher energy, feels himself liberated from these partially Neptunian and Martian longings for the world of desire, or for that which desire normally reveals, and being free, no longer having that, being under the spell of those lower magnetisms, he rushes forward as if into the higher worlds and out of the personal world altogether. And that rushing forward is in a way accomplished through an intensification of a point of tension which negates the spell, the magnetism, which the lower worlds have over the point of being consciousness. At least they have had a kind of a spell and magnetism over that point which we are. But are we free yet? Not quite, because the lower nature and the atomic life, the elemental life within the lower vehicles of the planetary logos does not give up that easily. So instead of the voice of the silence and the voice of God and the one unitive voice which rings out with spiritual authority, we have the many voices which now speak. Myriads of voices speak and halt me in my tracks. These are voices that are coming from behind the back. They are coming from the past. They are coming from all that is well and long established in our lives as a personal individual. And they are a magnetic draw. They are like, when you have a headwind, the airplane has trouble advancing. This is not so much a headwind as a backward draw, a great magnetism, a great longing for the past. The thunder. Now it's kind of interesting. There's lightning, there's thunder. The lightning is associated with the first ray. It strikes before you even hear it. Thunder, interestingly, is associated with the second ray, either positively or negatively. I guess the second ray is the ray of attachment. And we are talking about attachment because just because you feel a sense of temporary freedom and an exhilarating possibility of rushing forward into a new life doesn't mean you have really dealt with the lure of the past, which can surprise you at any time, even when you think you may be done with it. And I'm sure many of us have that type of experience, surprised by the past and by the power of the past. So instead of that voice of the silence, of the voice of God, that higher unitive voice, there are many, many sounds in this world of multiplicity, which the 18 lower subplanes are. I think we're not so much worried here about the voice of the soul as an individual. One day, the voice of the so-called individual soul will present its own challenge when we seek to become liberated into the plan and purpose of God at the fourth initiation. We're not talking about the fourth initiation now. So the higher mental plane and the structures on the higher mental plane are not the obstacle. It's more the 18 lower subplanes, which are elemental in nature and very familiar. And I discussed the idea of familiarity. The thunder of the sounds of earth, all the customary sounds, many sounds of which we love, are familiar with, are near and dear, represent our family, and those we hold close. In Master Moria's words, the near ones shuts out the voice of God. The voice of God is very subtle, and only by great striving and a high point of sustained higher tension does the voice of God really appear to the striving one. It will be an exhilarating voice, but it will also be a voice which threatens the loss of the familiar, which is why I think at the third initiation we have that great struggle between Mars and the moon veiling a hidden planet. You may remember. I'll go there. It's page 71. At the third initiation, the moon veiling a hidden planet. It's got to be Vulcan. There's nothing else hidden right now, at least within our normal intra-Plutonic space and Mars bring about a fearful conflict. But at the end, the man is released from personality control. So that's the battle between Cain and Abel. Vulcain kills Abel. The will kills the lower desire nature. So going back, if we can. Okay. Right. There we are. I turn me on my forward path. It's about forward and backward, isn't it? What you face, upon what you turn your back, these are the issues on the path, which has a certain linearity to it, at least in the symbolism. I turn me on my forward path. Notice, of course, the old language. It's Elizabethan in nature, which, of course, makes me think that the Tibetan, one of the Eastern masters most proficient in English, had some kind of Elizabethan association. That's a speculation, but certainly the English that he knows is older. Although, after work with Alice Bailey, she presenting a more modern form of English, I'm sure the Tibetan adapted quickly and was speaking in more modern English. I turned me on my forward path and vision once again the long-held joys of earth and flesh and kin. We are really in the realm of the moon here, aren't we? We're dealing with the second aspect, with attachment to the third aspect of divinity. Or let's call it the life of form, because the life of form is created by the second aspect, which utilizes the matter of the third aspect to make the forms to which one is attached by means of the second ray. Envision once again the long-held joys, long-held, millions of years held. In this realm, the desire nature was fulfilled. It did not extend itself beyond the 18 lower subplanes. And matter of fact, in a way, it's very focused in the realm of the dense physical, using all the other energies of the personality to bring about the successful fulfillment of desire in the dense physical world. We are not yet disembodied minds or disembodied sentiencies, perhaps after death, more so, yes. But long held on the physical plane, and because thy life is mostly centered upon the plane of concrete life, thy words and speech will indicate thy thoughts. So this is from the 15 councils in white magic. I think it's council number 12, telling us just how very much we are centered on the plane of concrete life. So, in a way, lower Venus calls back to us, lower Taurus makes sensuality and sensuousness look very attractive in the occult sense. The earth is the 18 lower subplanes, in a way. Flesh relates to the second aspect and holding the objects of desire very close, and kin is family, especially family as conceived in physical terms. We do have kinship, emotional kinship, yes, we have mental kinship. All of those things can apply in this case, but the kith and kin, the near ones, these attract us strongly when we, in ourselves, fear losing them by establishing too high a point of tension. Of course, as DK assures us in Esoteric psychology too, all that is apparently lost is restored, but on a higher turn of the spiral. So the veil descends. The veil, a subtle veil, which vibrationally, electrically, hides the perception of, the consciousness of, that which had been coming into real focus, and the higher worlds which seemed newly tangible and open to acquisition, and open to impression from them. Those fade out. I lose the vision of eternal things because I'm visioning the long-held joys of earth and flesh and kin, and we cannot have longing for both simultaneously. We can, in the future, vision earth and flesh and kin, but from an entirely new and lofty perspective. As long as we are longing for them, the very desire for them shuts out the vision of eternal things. Eternal things are those things which really last. The evanescence of earth and flesh and kin, these are known too well. We remember how the man felt here. He felt, time and its myriad forms I know too well. He really was disgusted with them in the beginning. But when faced with the possibility of losing them through an intensification of the point of tension, he reverts, or something in him reasserts itself, and he is drawn backward to familiar joys. Maybe he experiences a sense of relief for a short while, until the spirit within him again demands its freedom, and divine discontent takes over. He can never, having visioned God, having heard the voice from heaven, he can never rest content in that relief, personal relief, which he experiences as he turns back and once again embraces the long-held joys. I lose the vision of eternal things. The voice of God dies out, and is replaced by a myriad of other voices with which he becomes temporarily preoccupied, enjoying for a short time that preoccupation, but probably inwardly attacked by the sense of discomfort and annoying sense of spiritual failure. It becomes necessary to leave the familiar. I think it was Jesus, or Christ through him, that said that a man must leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. In this case, the wife is like the soul. It's like a higher marriage. But anyway, we must leave the familiar Cancerian lunar elemental worlds, which would hold our consciousness in perhaps a pleasant but all too familiar bondage, until such bondage became intolerable. Well, so here we have a great contrast, don't we, between verse number 3 and verse number 4. The great pairs of opposites are operating in the life of this candidate for the third initiation, inspired from on high, and joyfully visioning higher possibilities, breaking free from so many things that held him, but not really free, yeah, and rushing forward into a new world until the old world speaks, stops him in his tracks, and all of the new impressions, the higher exhilarating impressions, are shut out. They're veiled. He loses sight of them as he attends to all that he once considered so valuable and really counts the cost. What am I leaving behind? What is the sacrifice I'm called upon to make? Is it worth it? These are issues which come up in that fearful conflict which precedes the third initiation, as DK tells us, when Mars and the moon-raving Vulcan are at war. And then the fifth verse, torn again am I. Well, he started out in the second verse being very torn and saw no resolution. But now he has heard the voice of God. He has tasted something of the divine touch. The vividness of God has become more intense. And so he realizes if he doesn't make a choice, he's going to lose the higher worlds. He's definitely going to lose one of these worlds or another, at least temporarily. Torn again am I, but only for a little time. A little time this time, because the pull between the pairs of opposites is so strong that this condition of back and forth cannot last forever. The form couldn't take it, and eventually the hour of decision will come, and the man will be almost, let's say, forced to put his will on one side or another. In one sense, it's a Libra moment, and he could go forward into Scorpio with his sense of triumph over the lower vices and the chains of glamour which hold him to the world which desire indicates. Or he could fall backward into Virgo in order to have to be refashioned, remolded, reborn, you know, let matter reign. He goes back into the material world. He is in the clutches of the mother aspect, the third aspect of divinity, until, again, the assertion of the will frees him from that type of magnetism. Torn again am I, but only for a little time. And here is the oscillation of the aspirant. Must be quite painful and full of friction for a while. Backward and forward shifts my little self. He is the disciple. He is the jiva. He is the point of being consciousness. He is Janus. In a way, he's looking toward the earlier experiences backward and forward towards God and the monad and the triad, backward and forward, shifts my little self, and this experience can be expected to go on for some time. Would it be resolved in a single life, or will it have to be carried into a future life? That remains to be seen. Backward and forward shifts my little self. E'en as a bird soars into heaven. In this case, the bird is the jiva, the volatile essence. Well, it's not the liberated volatile essence, but it's certainly the point of being consciousness prompted by its own ability to be free and to soar like a bird. E'en as a bird soars into heaven and settles back again upon the tree. The tree is rooted to the earth. The tree has its roots below. Perhaps this little bird can find its branch or its next place of standing in a tree, a spiritual tree, a transparent or translucent tree, which has its roots above. So settle, you know, what are you willing to settle for? Many people settle. The aspiration burns for a while and then they settle down into a more stable personal condition, and the opportunity passes, says DK. It passes without their realizing that it passes. The door has somewhat opened, but then the door closes, and for the remainder of that life, it does not open again, and they do not even realize the opportunity they have lost or the fact that the door really is closed. Perhaps they continue to hope that the door will be open for any aspiration at any time which they follow. But I think there are moments of opportunity. There are great waves upon the sea of life, and if you take the wave, you are brought far upon a distant shore, the shores of the cosmic ethers. where true life begins. But if not, then perhaps you're cast back upon the lesser shore, from which there is no immediate departure. So I think we should take our opportunities as they arise and certainly try to recognize when they are happening. Torn again am I, but only for a little time. The second and third initiation can be taken in the same life. The third and fourth initiation can be taken in the same life. The fourth and fifth in the same life. You begin to see how the linking might make it possible for such a one, let's say as Milarepa, to move all the way from the second initiation to mastership in the same life. When I read of his life, it seems daunting. It seems that that is what he did, which is certainly not the way for most. Backward and forward shifts my little self. Master Moria talks about the dance that many aspirants do between what they should do and what they're attracted to do, a backward attraction, and it causes blisters, he says, blisters on the soles of the feet. So there is this halfwayness that many of us are given to for a time until either the courage of the flaming heart or the courage of desperation builds up sufficiently for the bird to fly free. Backward and forward shifts my little self, e'en as a bird soars into heaven, into the higher plains, and settles back upon the tree. But there is a happy anticipation here. The higher aspects, the monad, God, yet God in his high place outlasts the little bird. The fluctuations of the little bird, God, this great magnetism of Sanat Kumara, of the planetary logos, the magnetism of the monad within us, which is an aspect of these higher beings, outlasts the fluctuation of the little jiva, which must return to its source. The monad went forth, but the monad stayed at home at the same time. An aspect of the monad remains on its own plane, and yet, through some psychic process of self-limitation, is able also to venture forth into the lower planes, into what we might call the worlds of immersion. So that is the bird, that is the jiva, and it will return, because God, the great magnetism, the great attractor, will inevitably outlast the dual attractions of the jiva, the little bird, and will reinforce the higher of these attractions, which is really the spirit speaking within the jiva. Outlast the little bird, thus do I know. Here's an inner affirmation for the candidate who is really trying to tip the scale here because he's been so wretched between the possibilities. Thus do I know that God will victor be. It's a faith, isn't it? And later hold my mind and me in thrall. Well, I will be the, what will I be? I will be subject to the great energy. I will be a subject. It will be not my will, but thine be done. And this I know through faith at this point in the process. A great confidence enters. Not just this wretchedness of, I don't want that, I don't want that, I can't reach that, I'm tired of that. Not that. Not those things. But an inner confidence arises. And a knowing of imminent success arises. Because the impression of God has been felt, the voice of God has been heard, the energy of the higher worlds has been impressed, and it has made its way into the consciousness. So with this backward and forward experience, every time the bird flies up, it flies into the sun and experiences more and more of the intensity of God. And when it lands upon the tree, the law of repulse is operative, which is the first law of the soul in which the spiritual triad is involved. The spiritual triad representing the monad and its freedom and its will to be free. So the tree is there as a place of relief, but eventually it becomes a place of which is all too familiar and against which a repulsion builds, and finally one just takes off, says, I can't return to that branch on the tree which is rooted to the earth. Of course, that doesn't mean that the fully liberated human being under the Bodhisattva vow will not return. He will return to the lower planes, just as Jesus returned or Christ returned, but he will not be captivated by the place of return. He will not long for the place of return. His only longing will be for service in the place of return. Yet God in his high place outlasts the little bird. It's just a point of observation. Just God is stronger. God is stronger than the retroactive impulses in my nature. They're stronger than that which is reactionary in me. Thus do I know, and with confidence, that God will win, will victor me, and later. How much later? Maybe not too much later, but this gives, confidence in the back and forth. Every time the back and forth occurs, there's more confidence that one day the bird will fly free, and every time the bird flies, and it's for a little longer, a little longer, a little longer, even though it may come back to the branch. They come back to the branch for a while, and one day we'll see the final takeoff into the world of the spirit, into the world of the divine. So my mind will not be the concrete mind. It will not be concerned only with the lower and lesser, more concrete things, all important in their own way, but it will be concerned with that which the mind reveals, the transcendental mind reveals in the world of the spiritual triad. And I will be the slave. I will be enthralled to the greater energy within me. You know how it is with Pisces. At first, it's the soul that is captive to the personality, but later the personality is captive to the soul. And then the consciousness itself is captivated by the spirit. So there's an idea here of thraldom, kind of slavery, but it's a willing submission, just as the Christ offered in the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but thy will be done. Confidence, okay. And from this confidence, the implication is the bird has taken off. The bird is now free. And the bird is soaring, and the bird is in the higher realms. The point of tension of the consciousness is now in the higher realms, on the other side, the higher side of the Antikarana. Hark to the joyous paean that I chant. Word chant is interesting because it shows it's more than just words. It has the power of rhythmic sound, which DK tells us is part of this great stanza, even though he doesn't give us the method of chanting it with accuracy. And a paean is a song of victory. Just study the idea of this, of the fourth ray, and how it's the paean of victory and the agony of defeat. These held him down. Well, that's an earlier stage. Now there is indeed a victory. The bird flies free, and the work is done. What work is that? The work within the lower three worlds, the karmic obligation within the lower three worlds. Saturn has been fulfilled. Venus is rising on the mountaintop, the harbinger of the light sublime, the light supernal. The sun is rising on the mountaintop behind Venus, symbol of the spirit, the sun, the spirit, Venus, the soul. A type of liberation is occurring. The third degree is occurring. My ear my consciousness, is deaf to all the calls of earth, the normal attractions, the normal lures, which would bring us back into the lower sphere for participation in that which is of lesser value than what we have discovered. My ear is deaf to all the calls of earth except to that small voice, reminds us of the still small voice of all the hidden souls within the outer forms. They are not yet expressing. We are surrounded by who's the Victorian poet Robert Browning calls half formed creatures. I guess we are all partially formed creatures. We are surrounded by half formed creatures. The soul is hidden. The personality is evident, but the true man within is not evident, is not radiant, is not fully expressing. This really begins to happen at the third degree, where there is a conquest of the elemental forms by the radiance of Venus and the Sun. So this bodhisattva, this one who cares, he's being liberated and yet he cares, is attentive to the small voice of all the hidden souls within the outer forms. He wants to draw them forth. He wants to evoke them. He wants them to have the kind of experience that he is having. For they are, as myself, potentially liberated, even though in prison now, capable of liberation, capable of conquest of the personality. The ancient authority of the personality can be ended for them too, even as it is ended for this candidate. For they are as myself, with them I am as one. So here the candidate has moved beyond my soul and thy soul into the soul, the one soul. The candidate realizes, naught is but me. This is a revelation upon the mountaintop. This is the unification of Venus and the synthesis of the Sun. The synthesis, of course, is not complete yet. It will not be complete, relatively complete, until the fifth initiation, which is the acme of humanhood. The master is still a man, the Choan, in a way, is not. But still at the third degree, there is that realization of unity and dawning synthesis. Hark to the joyous paean that I chant. Joy is of the soul, and when one realizes oneself as the soul and as a soul in process of liberation, great is the joy. Because the eternal things are known. He no longer loses the vision of eternal things. The vision of eternal things is right before his eyes and before his opening unitive eye, his Shiva eye, which sees all things in unity and in dawning synthesis. But the compassion is growing here, and even though he is not lured by desire, by the calls, the magnetisms of the earth, he does realize the presence of all the hidden souls, and his purpose becomes to evoke the coming forth of those hidden souls within the outer forms. He still realizes the nature of those forms, but he's more subtle now. He can see within them, behind them, and find his kinship with all the imprisoned souls, the ones that are hidden from manifestation. And whatever ray he may be on, his task will be to draw them out and draw them forth towards the mountaintop experience eventually, so they will be able to rise, even as he has risen. He knows the kinship in soul, the group soul, the one soul he finds that which is in the diversity of form, which is even as himself. He is not misled by diversity. Diversity comes in on the third aspect, and it can be blinding. One can miss the forest for the trees. One can miss the wholeness of the forest for the many individual trees. The third ray and the fifth ray can divide. Later, of course, they can reunify, but at first they can divide. And the third aspect must be overcome by the consciousness of the second aspect. So there's this great kinship and this feeling of at-one-ment with all souls. Human beings are known as souls within the one soul, which is dawning upon the man whose third eye is opening. Really, it's been opening since the first initiation, but a fuller flowering of the third eye is occurring at the time of the third degree, when the unity of consciousness becomes a fact in life. So let's read, I will go on, in the next one, but we'll read the ones we have read so far, just to get that sense of continuity. I stand between the heavens and earth. I vision God. I see the forms God took. I hate them both. Naught do they mean to me. For one I cannot reach, and for the lower of the two I have no longer any love. Torn am I. Space and its life I cannot know, and so I want it not. Time and its myriad forms I know too well. Pendant I hang betwixt the two, desiring neither. God from high heaven speaks. There is a change. I hear with ear attentive, and listening turn my head. That which I visioned, yet visioning could not reach, is nearer to my heart. Old longings come again, yet die. Old chains of glamour snap. Forward I rush. Myriads of voices speak and halt me in my tracks. The thunder of the sounds of earth shuts out the voice of God. I turn me on my forward path. And vision once again the long-held joys of earth and flesh and kin. I lose the vision of eternal things. The voice of God dies out. Torn am I again, but only for a little time. Backward and forward shifts my little self. E'en as a bird soars into heaven and settles back again upon the tree. Yet God in his high place outlasts the little bird. Thus do I know that God will victor be, and later hold my life and me in thrall. Hark to the joyous paean that I sing, the joyous paean that I chant. The work is done. My ear is deaf to all the calls of earth, except to that small voice of all the hidden souls within the outer forms. For they are as myself, with them I am as one. So we will leave the two climactic verses until number 7, Adventures in Identification number 7, and we will sound the great invocation. Okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends. We will move on to number 7, and hopefully in just a little while. See you then.